Everyone, please relax. We're here. The boys are back and we're doing another episode of Loud About Nothing. Okay. It's me. It's your boy. It's the fucking hottest dude in the podcast game. That fucking Gavon Pope himself. All right. The Gavon Pope himself, Sebastian Canelli. Okay. Everyone calm down. He is here and he is looking cute two boots. Okay, he is my nephew. He may not be blood, but man, he stole my fucking heart. All right, bro, give it up for the cute boy himself, Robbie. Robbie, say what's up.
What's up, Sebastian?
Robbie, I have a question for you. Is it impossible for you to wear baggy clothes now? Because I can see your muscles through that loose ass shirt.
Thank you.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, we were working out, the two of us.
Bro,
you just did a whole session flexing for me on Zoom.
Don't you dare tell people that. Don't you dare. You took a video and you said, can I share this? I said, absolutely not. Because I stood behind my chair and I leaned forward and flexed for you for 3 minutes. Oh, God, this is what we do. Waist up, because if we were we can't do waist that. Okay, we got fire. We got heat, because that's what we do, bro. We got my boy, my boy. He's a writer, producer. He does special effects. I've been doing comedy with him for fucking 10 years now. Give it up for one of my best friends, Matt J. Weir. Matt, say what's up.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Loud About Nothing universe. Is that what you call it?
The hotties.
Well, he calls them the hotties.
The hotties. Yeah, I gotta say, though, I love that the intro of this show, like, you came at Robbie like you were his aunt. You're like, I can see your muscles through your shirt. Oh, you're getting cute. I love that.
You know, I have to take care of the kid. He's got to hear from someplace. So I tell him the good stuff. So then sometimes when things are no good, I can tell him that. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's been a couple times I've had to say, hey, you got a comb, watch it run it through your hair. You know what I mean? If you compliment enough,
dude, it's
you
working.
Get to say that. I know.
Right. It looks like it's working too. Cause I did this show a while ago. It's a lost episode, but Robbie, you have a fireplace behind you. So whatever is happening from Sebastian.
The last time I had, I was in like a windowless chamber and now I have.
Yeah. You just had like the blue light of a sad TV, like on your face. Now, you're looking looking great, guys.
It's good advice. Yeah, Matt, this, you brought up a good point. I'm going to let the audience in a little bit. Matt was one of our first episodes.
Yeah, and it was phenomenal. It just, the audio wasn't good.
Phenomenal.
It was great. We were like, that was
my
amazing.
Voice.
We were so excited. It was like, we were like, oh, that we're getting it. We're figuring this out. Yeah. And then we go to listen back and the audio was just horrible. Matt's episode is actually where the Staten Island Sensei
clip. Yeah. Which we ended up posting.
Yeah. So still made a little blip.
It made a little blip.
The hotties universe.
I hope that you'll share some of those great stories you told us the last time. We'll get reused.
I'll try to remember them if I can. But yeah, what's up?
Please, there's literally zero pressure. Matt, I accidentally took a hit of weed before the podcast. So, I mean, it is a vibe, okay? This is a total vibe, all right? I got my Dunkin' cup. It's full of water because I've had already 3 Coke Zeros, and it's not even 6 o'clock at night, okay?
You look like you just pledged a frat, Sebastian.
Oh, because I got my collar shirt on today.
And the backwards hat with and the hair swapping out.
I'm nervous because I hear the hazing is hard, okay? I hear that the hazing is no good. Matt, were you in a frat?
No, not at all. When I got to college, I was very much a skateboarder type who was like, I'll be on my own. But I ran with there was dudes I met that were on the swim team, and that was like kind of a friend.
Sure.
And then there was a really good friend. I had quit school at one point. When I came back, he was in a frat, and he told me that he joined it because I left, which is total bullshit. But yeah,
wow.
I was never part of that Greek life, you know.
I feel you. No, I feel you. There's, I mean, it has a reputation. Let's just say this. It has a reputation. I was part of a frat. I was part of the Alpha Sigma Betas, the Riders of the Night. We're dirty motherfuckers. We rather fuck the fight.
Wow.
Am I not allowed to say that?
No, you can. Do you have a brand or something?
We're not going to be the ones who knows that. Yeah. Whether you can say that or not.
I don't think I can say that. No. I don't think, I think that that was secret.
Whatever.
Yeah, you just like not anymore. You gave it up.
Not anymore. Robbie, and you know Robbie, he was the king of Greek life. What was the award that you won?
Embarrassingly into Greek life. Greek man of the year. I was like the press. I would have a meeting once a week. I know.
Greek man of the year.
Yeah, which I won that award, was like, this is it. I could die now.
Yeah.
So embarrassing.
What is that like? I feel like that's supposed to open a door to something. What is it? Like, you get in a magazine? Is there a Greek life magazine or something?
You know how bad Evangelos felt that you won Greek man of the year and his ass is working three shifts at the diner? He can't win Greek man of the year? You scumbag. Evangelos. How dare you take it away from Evangelos? He's doing fucking Easter for 42 hours, right? How dare you take it away from that goddess, okay?
It was, we were both there together on the podium. And when they said my name, I wish you could have seen his face. Poor Evangelos.
Wow.
You should have seen his grandmother.
He's like, he's never made a fry in his life. This fucking kid.
The kid does disco, curly, waffle, bro. Come on. Wow. How is he not winning Greek man of the year? He calls
salad. That's what I'm
saying. 100%. A salad with feta, he just calls it a salad. You know what I mean? He doesn't even drop the Greek in front of it. Okay.
Robbie, put your forearm up to your camera real quick.
Let's do that. Forearm. Yeah, let's see your forearm.
Yeah.
What is this doing?
No. Other side. Dude, it's not hairy enough to be a Greek.
No!
I worked with some Greeks at a Greek restaurant. Not hairy enough, dude.
No, I'm not a very hairy guy.
The bad stereotype.
Yeah, this is actually disgusting. Actually, Robbie, we're gonna we'll erase that.
We have to rescind this award.
Have to make things right, bro. This is actually disgusting.
I gotta make things right by Evangelos.
You have to make things right with Evangelos, okay? The poor dude. I mean, are you kidding me? Yeah, he's doing fine for himself, and he goes down to a fucking. He makes sure to fucking hit the Cayman Islands once a year because you know he likes the sun. All right, but don't do that to Evangelos.
All right. Well, I'll make things right by E, Big E.
Matt.
Yes.
Are you mad that everyone's now getting into skateboard stoner culture and that's what is who you truly are and now everyone thinks it's a cool thing?
It's weird. I mean, because when I was a kid, it was cool, I guess. And then I just never stopped being that. Except, I don't know. I mean, it's weird to see like people wearing certain things like Thrasher because like it was impossible to get that unless you like had a subscription, like, especially that sweatshirt, and now it's everywhere. And like, I don't really give a shit. I don't own clothes or I don't own the right to own clothes, but it's like,
sure,
it is weird. And it's at least cool because it's like, all right, but you might be like, oh, that's a cool magazine. And people are like, what? It's a magazine?
I know, the creator come out and be like, yeah, I don't like that Justin Bieber and all these celebrities wear my shit. Didn't he say something like, I'd rather they didn't?
I could see that. I mean, there is like, especially because the stuff that got cool was like skateboard culture and like metal. And in some of those cultures, their dicks like that. Like, when I was a skateboarder, it was like, you don't want rollerbladers around. I tolerated BMXers, but I know a lot of people hated them. And then at the skate park, I mean,
so
now,
let's get what's the hierarchy at the skate park? I want to run down the hierarchy at a skate park. Right. Oh, this is real OG shit, right? This is what Jonah Hill, this is who he wished he was hanging out with, Jonah Hill, right? When he makes the movie, the 2000s, right?
Mid-90s,
whatever it is. I saw the sequel. I saw the 2000s.
Wow. You saw a screener for the sequel.
I got a screener for the new Jonah Hill. I got the 2000s. And you know what? Fan of moderate, okay? They do use one word a lot that they should not, okay?
Yeah. I mean,
what's
like,
the hierarchy at the skate park?
Dude, this is mid-90s when I was a kid.
Perfect. Jonah Hill's hardest.
And this is Northeast Philadelphia, PA. So like, especially Philly, skaters, there's the old school skaters. A lot of times they're like the old dudes who I guess were probably my age, like mid-30s, maybe even 40s. They're still like, that's their life. They're missing fucking teeth. They got tattoos all over the body. They're not wearing shirts. They smell like shit. Yeah. But they're like fucking carving up. I'll use FDR. FDR is a skate park underneath Philly, or it's a underneath I-95 in Philadelphia.
THPS4. Yeah. You don't gotta tell me.
Oh, that's right. I forgot I was in a video game.
But you don't gotta tell me. I'm a fucking THPS4 slut. Okay.
Yeah,
I was a slut for THPS4. Okay. Okay. I'm just like letting you know. I played Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4, and I once turned to my friend. No drugs, no alcohol. It was New Year's Eve. We're playing the game. It was 4 a.m. I looked at him and I said, after like minutes of silence, I just looked at him and said, "These are the days." I just, after minutes of silence of playing THPS4 for hours, just in silence, I looked at him and it said, "These are the days." And I could still tell my friend, I go, "Remember the days?" And he knows I'm speaking about that one day when we were at New Year's Eve. It was like the year before we both started like partying. And those were the days. So there's the old dude at the park, right? Who's lower than the old dude after the old dude?
Oh, wait. All right, so then those are like there's always like some, I mean, I say those guys run the shit because if you get in their way, they'll yell at you sometimes. Yeah. They'll take you out. Then there's like,
what do you mean after take that, you out? What do you mean?
They'll run into you, man. Like they'll just run into you and they'll say, "Where are you my fucking way?" or whatever. Like I've seen, I was never like a jerk, but I remember like running into a little kid because I didn't see him coming over a pyramid and I felt bad. And then his dad was an old type. His dad was like an old skater. And the dad came over to me and I apologized, thinking he was gonna be pissed. And he's like, "No, he needs to learn." And I'm like, "Okay." Like,
wow. Yeah. Wow. Savage shit happening.
So that's like that culture. But I'd say it's like, there's like skateboarders. I don't know. It really depends where you're at and how many people are there. If there's more BMXers, then it's the BMXers. And I feel like nobody respects rollerbladers, but I can't even tell you what they used to be called.
Wow. I just think that it's interesting that all this aesthetic is coming back, and I just know this is you at your core.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you. I mean, yeah. I would skateboard, except then I don't have health insurance, and I want to break my legs.
Wow. Wow. That's not that. I mean, that's a real skateboarder. That's
right.
All the kids that walk around with the skateboard smashing it up. Take a lesson from this. The kid doesn't have health insurance, so he can't skateboard. Now that's a real board, dude.
Well, I watched a kid the other day, or no, I guess it was a couple months ago now. His dad was a skateboarder guy and he was down the street and the kid was trying to jump like an eight set and eight stairs. And this kid was just throwing himself down the stairs and eating shit. And he would get back up. And I remember, I was like, man, I remember I used to run back up the stairs and do it again. And now I just lay there. I wouldn't be able to do it.
Jesus.
That's how hard I am now.
I did a jump once on a bicycle. I did a jump once on the bicycle and I literally jumped. And I think I didn't even leave the ground, but I remember my body left, but the bike stayed on the ground. And then my ball slammed onto the seats. And then I had to walk my bike home. I was in so much pain.
Oh, yeah. You pee blood?
Not for that reason.
Oh, okay.
Not for that reason. I was peeing blood before that day. I was hoping I'd hit hard enough that it'd go back into reverse, you know? Two negatives make a positive, you know? But
yeah, not knock it back in the place. So it's not the bloodstream. It's the urine stream.
Yeah, I know. It's just a switch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's no simple. Train track switch, you know?
Matt, I got you on this week for a specific reason. It is WrestleMania weekend.
What?
Yes.
I didn't know. No, I know. It's WrestleMania is like a week long.
I know. It's like an event. And why I want you on is because you had a long, long stint at WWE.
Long as in like slightly under 2 years. I mean, that's considered a long time, I think. I don't know what it's like now, but yeah, I was there.
Okay, if we're going to do a Yelp review on what it's like to work at WWE, what would you say about it?
Is this the corporately approved Yelp review, or is this just like guy that worked there for a bit off the street that lives in the gutter now?
Well, let's go with the gutter one. I did call myself Tony Hawk slut before, so
yeah,
we could go with the gutter one.
I would say it's a Carney's empire in a corporate suit, and in the day and age of like overexhaustive PR and being like morally right in the work environment, it's a place that will make you go crazy because it tells you, yeah, take this HR thing about sexual harassment and then you'll get yelled at and told to suck somebody's dick like the very next minute.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Just so everyone knows the capacity Matt worked there, his alias is AJ Styles. So,
yeah, yeah. If you can't tell,
I'm actually a wrestler.
No, I was a wrestler.
Writer.
Yes, I was a writer producer there, and the writing team I really liked. I really enjoyed a lot of people there. They were really good writers, and their creativity was held hostage constantly, and still is for the people that are there.
But you got to write with cool people. You got to write with Road Dogg.
Oh yeah, Road Dogg was my boss. I spent a lot of Thursday afternoons hanging out with him in his office and just pitching wild, fun stories and ideas. And I looked up to him as a kid because he was just like a shit talker on the mic.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was cool to like grow up and then just get to hang out with a dude that I really, I guess, kind of looked up to in a weird way. And now I know all his dark secrets. Stop. But
did they always have a writing team?
So no, back I think it was like at some point when WWE went public stock-wise, they I think Vince was like, we need to like make sure that this is like wrestlers used to go off the top of their heads with like the old promos, and now he wanted to control it so that they didn't swear as much or whatever. And now it's like, in my mind, completely overly written. But I guess I think the last like maybe a little under 20 years there's been writers. So
oh wow, it has been that long.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean at this point I think I could be totally wrong, but I know there wasn't that many of us, and that was kind of cool. It like because you kind of felt like part of this really weird crew of people that got pushed into this hostile environment that really didn't like having Hollywood writers around. Like that's what you're just considered, a Hollywood writer, even if you're from New York or wherever you're from.
Yeah.
By no offense. Vince calls you a Hollywood writer?
Well, it's like more like some of the older wrestlers that are still like producers and still hang out. Like, you know, people like it's weird. I'm trying not to like name names. I should probably will at some point. But like old guys, like when I was a kid, I watched them, and now they're like 30 years later, they're like behind the scenes, and you're like, oh wow, like IRS is here, and he just told me to call him Mike, and then he spit tobacco into a cup.
Pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Yeah, Matt, can you tell this? Can you tell the story about when you and Shane McMahon almost fucking beefed? When you two almost threw down, please.
Oh yeah, I will. And also, I have there's an update to this story because I saw him on the street.
Wait, don't tell me. Tell the story and then tell me the update. So I'm there with the audience because I love this story. You have to tell the audience about this. Everyone knows Shane McMahon's Vince McMahon's son. He's a little fucking baby.
Shane is Vince's son. And at one point, like back, I guess in the 90s, the Attitude Era, Shane was part of the company. He like played a heel with his dad, bad guy. Uh-huh. And at some point he tried to go away and start his own business to like prove himself to his dad, or that's my assumption. But I think it was like a year in, or maybe a little less than a year, he came back early when I started. He came back to the company, and he was a character on the show. And we were in Indianapolis getting ready to do a SmackDown. I mainly wrote on SmackDown and NXT, but I was getting ready for SmackDown. Uh-huh. And I was writing a promo for a Japanese wrestler named Tozawa. And it was like before the Vince meeting, which is the Vince meeting is all the writers, a bunch of older producers, or old wrestlers, and then, you know, like announcers and just like production people. And so you have these meetings a couple hours before the live Raws or SmackDowns or whatever show. And that's where all the shows are approved. And so I'm like trying to finish this this piece, and Shane comes in. And I usually sat between JBL, who was a wrestler, and Devon Dudley. And so I was usually sitting between them, and they'd yell at each other over me. And Devon wasn't there, but Shane came in, and Shane just leans over to me and he goes, "You know, you're in my seat." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "You're in my chair." I'm like, "Okay." And I'm like still typing. And he starts like talking shit to me. And I'm like, "Okay." And he walks to the front of the room and he says, "I'm going to go get a coffee. When I come back, you better be out of my chair." And I was like, "All right, I don't know what he's talking about. There's really no assigned seats, even though we kind of all sit in the same spots." And he hadn't been there. So anyway, he leaves, and there's a couple people who were sitting behind me who I won't name, but they were like, "You're going to take that shit? You got to stand your ground, man." And it was very much like this prison situation where it was like, if I don't stand up for myself, who knows what's going to happen? But now I'm going to have to stand up for myself. And JBL's in my ear, and he's this big Texan dude who wears like a 10-gallon hat. And he's like, "Oh, what are you going to do? You going to stand your ground?" Like, you know. And I'm so like,
it's a culture that like promotes fighting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not just on the television, within the writer, on every level from top down.
And you're just in a suit.
Brawls.
You're in a suit and you're just trying to. Yeah. Matt had to wear a suit for every event.
I'm a scrawny dude in a suit who like barely ate for 10 years doing comedy in New York City. And
I know. This dude would eat a banana for dinner. Like,
yeah, man. And so I'm like dealing with these types of guys. Yeah. And I'm just kind of like at this point a little jaded where it's like, look, they're all like kind of, they're not full of shit. It's just like there's this whole hierarchy of respect here, and the writers are like the lowest of the low, and you just eat shit. And I was okay with it. You know, we used to make fun of each other all the time, so I didn't really care. I could take jokes or whatever. But anyway, JBL's talking shit. Shane comes back in. He sits next to me, and he's like saying shit to me, grabs me by my neck and tries to kind of lift me up. And I'm like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, okay. I see. Toothless tiger. And I was like, I couldn't understand.
He's also like a grown ass adult.
Yeah, he's like 50 right. years old on
he
steroids.
Is 50. Yeah. He's 50. I've met his kids. You know, like
Jesus
and so
Christ.
He's sitting down talking to me. And then Vince walks in. The meeting's finally gonna start. And he goes, he leans
alpha,
over to me.
The alpha dog walks in. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everyone gets so, quiet. Oh
dude. Yeah.
Is it like that? Everyone has the utmost respect for Vince no matter what.
Oh, yeah. Here's how every meeting would start. So usually this is like an hour late. Everybody's stressed out because we have a live fucking TV show to do. Everybody gets really quiet. It's dead silent. All these grown men and women are just dead silent. And then the door opens up and a 74-year-old man walks in. He goes, "It's as quiet as a fucking morgue in here." And then everybody laughs and stands up.
Same thing every time.
Yes, and almost every time.
Everyone laughs and stands up. That's a dream. He's living the dream.
So that he is, man. He's the emperor, and it's clockwork. And everybody stands up, and he shakes everybody's hand, and then like clockwork, he gets to Michael Cole, who's an announcer, and he goes, "Huh, oh," and everybody laughs because he pulls his hand away from Michael Cole. And then
every time.
So, yeah.
He is like an uncle. So, he's like a shitty uncle coming in with his jokes, but instead
you have
it's just
to
so toxic. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be like, "Ha ha, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, please don't murder me." But he makes his way past me. We shake hands. He moves on. Mm-hmm. He's walking up and Shane's like, "You want to show my dad how big your balls really are?" And like, I'm just like, "What is happening?" Here's my
what to show my dad how big your balls are, and he's talking about Vince McMahon, literally the creator of wrestling.
Daddy. He needed to call in his daddy.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Right. And so he's like, he's next to me saying this, and all I'm thinking is like, 20 years ago or however long, I was a little kid watching this guy, and now they're talking shit to me, and that's my boss. And I was just like, I don't know what to do, and so. He's talking shit to me most of the meeting. And then there's the end of the producers meeting. So they leave. And then the writers move closer to be next to Vince so he can hear us better. Uh-huh. And Shane moves up and he's standing. He's like hovering over my shoulder the whole meeting, just standing there. Like he could have sat down. He was just standing next to me. And he keeps like every once in a while, he'll like grab my shoulder and kind of like massage a little bit. I'm like, what is he doing? And I don't know what to do.
Jesus, this is a 50-year-old man.
I know.
He has gray hair.
So,
yeah.
Dude. So the day goes on. It's like a 12 to 14 hour production day. We shoot SmackDown. We shoot 205 Live. And I'm walking back to the hotel with my boss. And he goes, like a couple blocks out, he goes, hey, and at this point, I totally forgot about most of it. He goes, hey, what happened between you and Shane today? And I was like,
this is Vince asking you this?
No, this is a writer. He was like one of the managing writers.
Okay.
His name's, great guy named Dave. But we're walking back to the hotel and he's like, he asked me what happens. And then he told me Shane's on the private jet complaining about a writer. And I'm like, oh, great. Like, I'm going to get fired over some stupid shit or whatever.
Oh my
God. And I tell Dave like what happened. And he's like, look, man, next week, just apologize to him on the road. Like his, you know, he told, like, basically Dave is like, you know, you kind of stood up to him. So Vince is probably going to think you're cool because like, you're not going to take shit from his son. I was like, okay, like, we'll see how it pans out.
Mm-hmm.
And the following week we're in Pittsburgh and we have these huge like catering lunches in like every town. And so I was sitting down to eat breakfast and Shane sits at the end of the table. And it's like, he's obviously like right out of the corner of my eye.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to go say sorry to him and whatever, you know, it's this whole respect hierarchy and he's the top of the food chain or whatever.
Sure.
Which is stupid. But I walk over to him and I say, hey, Shane, last week, I didn't know if you were trying to mess with me. You're hazing me. Like I meant no disrespect or whatever I said. He's like, hey, bro, I was just messing with you, bro. Fist bump. And then he like went to fist bump me. And so I just fist bumped him. And then we ended up walking into the meeting together. Vince was inside and he's like, oh, they're going to go at it or something. And then all the guys were like, oh, they're going. And then we fake put up dukes or something and then did the meeting. But then later in that show, my alter ego, AJ Styles, threw his head through a back window of a car. So they shot that.
He's getting in real fights before his pretend fights.
This
old man. He's a brilliant person. Yeah.
This 50-year-old dude who's fighting me. Then he had to fight this guy. But they shot that part, and he had blood running down his head. And I walk by, and he points at me, and he goes, you're next, buddy. And I just yelled, to throw your head through a window? And then I just walked away. and then from then on, he was actually pretty cool with me, like, I'd see him backstage and he'd always, you know, like do like a weird, hey, what's up? And like, he did like the fist bump or whatever. He was fine.
Didn't you tell me that he sticks a knuckle out to make it hurt when he fist bumps?
Oh yeah. Well, he would do like a thing. I mean, he had like a weird, like rabbit punch fist bump that if you ever watch him fight in the ring, he has like these weird rabbit punches that
I guess it's
like a boxing punch. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was just, that was like, I thought for like a week that like he might try to murder me or like the McMahon family was going to murder me. But I mean, what? I still think they might.
What was Vince's diet? What would he eat?
Okay.
I've never seen a 74-year-old man that, I mean, he's on HGH. He's doing cycles.
He's on a lot. Yeah.
He hasn't stopped. Right. It's not a cycle. It's a tornado at this point, Vince. Okay. Because this is a whirlpool. Your fucking body. What does Vince McMahon eat for lunch?
Okay. I'll tell you what he eats mainly. And that leads into a story that.
Were you guys like always together? Like you were on the, when you say on the road, you were always on the road, just like with Vince.
Well, like yeah, I mean,
like a boy band together.
Yeah,
pretty much. Like I mean, big, we, giant, you know, we try to
doing arena tours.
Mm-hmm. It was Justin Timberlake, Vince McMahon, Matt Weir, right? It was squad. Dude. It was the Pussycat Dolls. Okay.
Right, dude. I doubt he knew like four writers' names. The rest of us, he'd be like, "Oh, you," and then like he knew. for a while, he was calling me like the foot fetish guy because I pitched something about people kissing a guy's foot. So it's like, oh, tell me about the foot. How sweaty is it? And like, it would be like, yes, sir. So it's really sweaty.
Is he funny? He like has somewhat of a knack for promo, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, dude, he's, he tries to purposely drive you crazy. He likes to like rib you. I mean, I feel like he yelled at me a few times just to try to get a reaction out of me. Really? And I've heard that from other people. Like the guy who hired me told me that too. He was like, hey, he'll fuck with you to try to get a reaction out of you. Jesus. And so, I mean, I don't know now. I mean, he's a lot older now. When I left, he was kind of like, I don't know. He was from 1 week to the next, he was forgetting things and then like yelling at you. And then it's like, well, you told us this. And then,
sure,
you know, it's what happens when you age, I guess.
So what did he eat? I need to know because I need to get my diet. Yeah. I need to get my diet right. I need to get on the everyone's doing the Chris Evans. Needs
to be on the Vince McMahon.
I need to be on the Vince McMahon diet. Okay, so
you need to, ease your way into the Vince McMahon.
I'm doing Vince McMahon diets. Okay, it's either David Goggins or Vince McMahon. That's what I'm gonna compare myself against.
David Goggins.
So what's he eat?
I said, okay, so he eats a shit ton of like granola bars. He's always like gnawing on a granola bar or something.
Don't get me started. I love Chewies. You know, I know I'm already in.
You got Quest bars, right? You're a Quest guy.
I'm a Quest freak. I went with Chewies because I thought it was more playful. But the truth is, I like a good Quest bar. Okay, I like a good Quest bar. I take a good Quest bar and I pretend it's raw cookie dough and I eat it and I go, "Yummy dessert, Sebastian." And I whisper that to myself, so then I think I ate something sweet.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to jump on. Hey, Quest, if you're listening, I don't think anybody is going to sell your shit like that guy just sold it.
So, you know,
hook this dude up with some ad rev.
Can I please get some Quest? Can I get some Quest money? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I would love some Quest money, okay? And I think that there's no one that they would rather have sponsoring their company than a fat fucking comedian that lives in his mom's basement, okay? If I am not the Quest brand, I don't know who is.
Yeah, because you're on a quest to find your way out of there. That's all you got to sell
it. 100%. It's Quest to Camelot. It's not my time of fucking basking in the sun at Camelot, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, all right, I'll tell you Vince's diet. Okay, so at least what we saw him eat for lunch every day was a big steak that was about the size of a fist. And beautiful. This was all, keep in mind, this is during meetings with him where we weren't allowed to eat, but we're starving and we have a live show to do. And who knows if we'll get food.
Wow.
But
wow.
He at some point, this lady, Jen, she was super nice. She was like his personal cook. She would come in, she would bring the steak, rice and spinach and ketchup. Beautiful. And mustard. He'd dump ketchup and mustard on a steak. He'd eat that. He'd usually push the spinach to the side and then maybe kind of toy with the rice. So mainly it was just a steak the size of your fist every day.
But he would have them bring the spinach just in case.
Yeah.
Emergency spinach.
Maybe he felt like he needed a green. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, but he would eat that every day. And one time specifically in Detroit, I remember he ate that. And then there was a bathroom right behind where he would sit. And so he went in the bathroom and he was in there for like a half hour. And like, we're all like waiting for him to come back so we can get the okay that the show's okay and we can start doing it. And I just remember all sitting there. And I think we all had that thought of like, what if he died in there?
We just watch our boss slam a steak and then go die in a bathroom behind us.
Right. Like this like 70-year-old dude, mid-70s-year-old dude just like dumped and died, you know? And
like, do you think if he was having a heart attack, would he yell, "I'm having a heart attack," or would he stand up and walk to somebody to say that he needs to go to the doctor?
He would stand up and walk to somebody, but I also feel like he's so rich, he has some sort of like implant in his heart, so when it goes, people know. And then it has like that, like that, like what was that that Jason Statham movie where they were like
crank,
crank. Yeah, crank. He's a crank thing in his heart. Yeah,
of course, please. I mean, I'm sure that he has the limitless drug. I'm sure that
Vince he had a Cairo chamber, dude. Like we're pretty sure there's like
chamber,
dude. We're pretty sure there's like three Vinces, man.
Yeah.
Would he bring like a gym on the road? Like how would everybody work out on the road?
Hotel, motel, gyms. And
oh really?
The wrestlers would work out of those, which is astonishing to me that they're in as good a shape they are and they're working out in hotels, motels.
Because
Vince tried to get
they say that this is a TikTok I saw the other day. They say, "I'm tired of trying to make heavyweight feel light. When you're a pro, you make lightweight feel heavy." I don't know why I felt the need to share that.
Yeah, Matt was about to tell us a story.
Matt was about to get that out.
But now you made me think of like the gym bro who's gonna like get that painting that says that. It's just the words of that painted on his like in his house somewhere.
100% You don't want to make wine shit. Don't make the hard things feel easy. Make the easy things feel hard. That's what that saying is summing summing it down to.
We needed it again, different.
Of course. Thank you. I'm Let's, really good.
You can do it again. Don't make the dull things feel sharp. Make the sharp things feel dull.
Oh, please. Don't make the spicy things feel creamy. Make the creamy stuff feel spicy. You know what I'm saying, bro?
Right.
Anyway, what were you going to say, Matt?
No, Robbie, let's just point out how good I am at podcasting because I interrupt my guests to literally give a fact,
a funny story heard already because we've done this before.
I have to throw in this quotable. You know what I'm saying? I'm pitching a Bed Bath & Beyond a men's section, okay? Yeah. Because women have all this who saved who, it's 1 o'clock somewhere. I'm pitching a men's section where we do stuff like that, you know?
Okay. You needed to get that in.
I need to get that in. I'm just trying to sell. Gary V, where we at? Okay.
Yeah. Trying to get that Quest money and that Bed Bath & Beyond money, man.
Of course.
Yeah. There's big markets.
Matt, you were saying something before Robbie really interrupted.
Vince and you working out.
After it was a Royal Rumble, I tell the story a lot. So if you've heard me on other podcasts, which is why you're listening to me, I'm sorry. But Vince threatened to hit me in the head with a sledgehammer at Royal Rumble 2017. And it was something that he didn't like in the script. So he threatened me, and then hours later, we drove from San Antonio to Laredo, Texas, and it was like 3 a.m. and I was walking to my room, and Vince was walking down the hallway towards me, and he was in all his sweatsuit. I was like, dude, this guy's 75. It's like 3:30 a.m. What is he doing? And I go, just trying to get by. I'm like, hey, sir, have a good night. He's like, good night. Good night. It's time to train, damn it. And then he tried to get me to go to the gym with him. And I was like, I got to do some stuff. And just like went in my room and locked the door, which I should have really done it in retrospect, but.
You should have.
Did you ever train with him?
I never trained with him.
Never.
No, I should have. I mean.
Dude, there's people out there probably pay $50,000 to train with him.
Yeah.
To train with Vince McMahon.
Are you kidding me? That's in a silent auction somewhere in the Hamptons. Okay. Yeah. Train with Vince McMahon. I can't believe you didn't do it. I would have done it in jeans, bro.
Yeah. There's I had a few interactions with him. I'm really happy I had, because they were like, wow, that was just me and Vince in a room and he ate a steak while I like did a character voice and then he laughed at it. You know, like stuff like that. Or like I remember pitching something to him, and then as I was saying it, he was eating a steak and Triple H, Stephanie, and Shane walked in. And it was like the whole Royal Wrestling family was standing there watching me pretend to be Tony Nese. He was like a cruiserweight guy.
Uh-huh.
And then like I said a pun, and then like Vince was like, oh, ha-ha. And then I like left, and then Brock Lesnar standing outside. And Brock Lesnar was waiting for me to leave Vince.
Wow.
You know, he could have just walked in and murdered me, and like nobody would care. They could have thrown me into Mexico from there. Where we were, Brock could have thrown me from that arena to Mexico. That's how close we were to Mexico.
Did you learn Vince's like sense of humor? Like, or was it always question mark? Like, I have no idea if he's going to like this or not. Or did you like grow accustomed
to something? You would learn like, you know what he finds funny, and it's like a lot of poop jokes and like it's just foul bad humor.
Oops. And I mean, this is a 12-year-old's company. These are all 12-year-olds.
Right. Yeah.
So he likes poop jokes and bad humor.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, he has 40 years of material to go back, and like you can kind of go through. I mean, right now NBC or Peacock bought the rights to WWE, and they're like going back and erasing all this stuff. It's just like no good. And I watched something the other day that's definitely, they're like taking out stuff that people might find offensive. So it's like, you know, one is like, all right, this is one of the main examples, but I think it was WrestleMania 3, Roddy Piper fought Junkyard Dog and he painted himself half black.
Okay, that's pretty bad.
The whole
pretty bad.
It's funny. He was the good guy in that too, but
he was the good guy. That says a lot.
He's like, right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing, his promo, he says, like, there's no way to defend him, but he's like, yeah, it doesn't matter what color, I'm fighting for every, you know, that thing. And
yeah.
It is what it is, man. Didn't age well. A lot of it won't. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of
it's also so live that it's hard for anything that is so live and like spur of the moment to age well.
Right.
You were
That's why there's so many writers.
Yeah. You were you got to be on Raw one night or something, right?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on a few times. I was Chris Jericho's limo driver. And so there was a whole segment where Chris was like running out of the arena and then he yelled at me and then I knocked the list out of his hand. And then when he bent to pick it up, comes back up, and then Seth Rollins, his nemesis, is standing there. So yeah, I got to do that. And then I was in a bunch of Goldberg walks. If you guys know who Goldberg is.
Of course, WCW.
Yeah. So you do these long walks with like people just lined up, and they were actually a lot of fun because it was always like, hey guys, this is the last thing of the night. Goldberg's going to like smash his head into a door, probably cut his head open. We're going to have to worry about him passing out on his way to the ring. So, yeah.
Wow. Was there anything you were surprised that Vince was about? You're like, oh, wow, I can't believe he bought that.
I mean, dude, it was every week you pour you're demanded. All of your creativity is like drained into thinking about what to do the next week and how to push people and how to like create new characters and how to just like take a person that's not really on TV, build a character for them, and then sell them to Vince so that Vince can sell them to the world. And hopefully that person who portrays that character gets a t-shirt, makes money, whatever.
Do you think that?
So shit, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, what are you going to say? I completely lost my train of thought.
Do you think Vince is a bad man at the end of the day? Because I watched the Andre the Giant doc, and he does not seem like a good man.
Yeah, he's definitely – all right. I've tried very hard not to, like, completely bash him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I should – yeah, there's, like, an admiration I have for seeing a person go so hard at creating this – totally insane world, and he like just went so hard at it. It's a worldwide brand, and unfortunately he crushed families, because wrestling's such a family business. He crushed these like families in the 80s to become an emperor, and I hate that part of him. There's like a vicious capitalist part of him that I really despise. I know like the American flag on his cell phone's complete bullshit. I know he'll sell out.
What do you mean, dude, by that?
$10 billion, like
the Saudi fight,
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is what it is. But at the end of the day, he's like a hardcore capitalist. That part I don't like, but I respect like the creative part of him, and like, you know, there's part of me that gets it. But then also like he would have crazy demands on people, where like there was a woman who we had this new character for, and she was supposed to be this sultry, sexy talent. And we were practicing her entrance to the ring, and we hit her music hit, she walked out, and then it cut. And then Vince comes out and he's like, let me show you how to walk sexy to the ring. And it's this 75-year-old man. Yeah. This is a 75-year-old man telling this like 20-year-old woman how to like walk sexy to the ring. And it's the funniest shit. But that's how specific he was, like how much of his vision he needed to like put out there. And every part of that company he touches. So
because he had to show the body, because he's obsessed with bodies more than he is the actual wrestler. Oh, yeah. He's obsessed with the male physique.
Right. Yeah, he has. I mean, dude, you, Sebastian, right now, if you chiseled down and you got fucking cut as shit, and then you just showed up in an arena and you were backstage and you were just kind of like lifting weights, he might walk by and be like, oh, who's that beefcake? Oh. And like, he's so into like, I mean, he probably has like Greek statues around his house, just chiseled John Cena's everywhere.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, he's very into like the male for like it's like almost like if you watch like Pumping Iron or those documentaries, how like it's it's almost impressive how they're able to mold their bodies like that. And he probably always wanted to be that, but he like never reached that pinnacle, I guess.
Right. I mean, he's a big fucking dude, even as an old guy. Like, I mean, he's like a little shorter than me, but still like his. Yeah, I don't know what that muscle is like.
The traps.
Wait, Robbie, you guys were in frats. What's that?
Yeah, traps. I guess traps. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, his traps are huge for this old dude. But
what do you think is gonna happen when he dies? What do you think the deal is gonna be?
Can Shane? It doesn't sound like Shane can run an empire.
No,
he doesn't sound like an emperor.
He's gonna go over to
is
fucking
Stephanie an emperor?
Kellogg's that they want to advertise something. He's gonna pick Kellogg's up by their neck. You know, I told you, you only get 2 half-hour, 30-second spots.
I like he calls the shots for the ads. I think Stephanie. I don't know. I've been thinking about it a lot because I think about it a lot for other reasons I don't want to get into, but. I do think Stephanie has a very corporate mind and she's also good. Like she was always really nice to me and seemed pretty pleasant. Triple H, I think will also kind of, I feel like Stephanie will be the face of the company and Triple H will kind of run the product, like the wrestling stuff.
Yeah.
And Shane will be around.
He's grandfathered in, basically. He's like my unlimited plan.
Yeah.
Nobody wants like, me I mean, to have it, but I do.
Yeah. And like a thing too is like everybody else has to wear a suit. Shane shows up in like a fucking like blazer with like cocaine on it and like 12 Apple Watches.
Do you think people are still like partying that hard?
They're
having more than one Apple Watch is so fucking funny.
Well, he's got to have different time zones.
Why would you ever need more than one Apple?
Yeah, bro, and he has a fist bump. I got to go to Phoenix right now. It's 4 there.
Yeah, it's interesting. My heart rate, on this side is 80 beats per minute, but this side is 92.
That's kind of the whole point of the Apple Watch is it does a bunch of different shit.
Hey, he's got Apple Watch stretch on his chest. You know, he's got them all over his body.
I saw him roll up his pant leg one time. He had them all up to like mid calf, maybe. Just Apple Watches, dude.
Wow.
Fucking loaded.
That's an icon. And this is why he doesn't need a Tesla.
He is, man.
Yeah, he's an icon.
No, he gets. Oh, I did mention that I saw him on the street. So he was at a biker rally about five blocks from where I live. And so my friend told me, hey, I saw Shane down here. And so I went by and I was like, I'm going to go talk to him. Cause I was like, fuck it. You know, if he's around, he was surrounded by a huge group of people. And I was like, you know what? It's his biker buddies. Cause he was in a tight blue t-shirt.
Like
it was all these like dudes in like, you know, biker cuts and then Shane in a tight blue t-shirt, fist bumping people.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't need to go like deal with him. Like,
sure.
Is what it is.
Sure. Wow. How do you think you didn't become a toxic person from working at WWE all the time? Because it sounds like it was a very machismo involved, you know, like it's all run by toxic masculinity stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it was like such a jarring, like I said before, a jarring move from where we were like doing comedy in the city to like that. Like it was very, just like, run like I don't want to say militaristic, but there was like that military hierarchy and like just bowing down to the emperor at all turns. But I don't know. I mean, I did definitely feel miserable for a while, and there's parts now of me where it opened my eyes to parts of the entertainment industry where I was like, oh, this is a microcosm of all of that. Like, here's this guy who calls all the shots, but then out west, it's like you get whatever you get, you know, you get a bunch of Vinces, then you'll never see them, you know?
And they might present.
That's what I appreciated.
They might present like,
I'm sorry.
They might present like a not as openly toxic as like,
right.
Vince McMahon.
Yeah, Vince
does.
Is just in your face.
Yeah. Yes. Vince
is he's the face. He's like, I like Trump. Yeah. Whereas in Hollywood, it's a little bit more deceitful. Because people are like, Hollywood's so liberal, but a lot of the people that are moving and shaking are have a fuck ton of money and are not
right. Yeah, they don't give a shit. They just want
they're
money.
Just like and Vince like, McMahon. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we love them because we're a part of them. Yeah. I mean it's like I'll talk bad about my family. You don't talk bad about my family. Okay. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I talk bad about my Hollywood. You don't talk bad about my Hollywood. Okay.
Yeah. There.
It's okay now. They just wrote a piece on Scott Rudin, so you're allowed. I don't know what the fuck's but it's like yeah, there is a certain mentality where it is like, okay, like these people are psychos, but they're gonna like steamroll everything to get what they want. And like, I definitely walked away going, if I ever run anything, I don't want to do what he did. I don't want to put people in this mindset of fear. And like, you know, there was one guy I worked with that like Vince called him Puffy one time. He said, "You look a little puffy." Or let me do my better Vince voice. Oh, you look a little puffy.
Jesus.
And the dude literally freaked out to me and was like, how do I look? Do I look puffy? Do I look fat? You know, he's freaking out. He started working out every fucking day. And then he'd be like, can you notice I'm losing weight? I just don't want Vince to think I'm puffy. And it's like, what are you doing, man?
Wow.
Like,
but you know what?
But I could never do that. I could never.
He would interpret that as like him being supportive. You know what I mean? He would be like, what? I told him he was puffy and now he's working out. Look, I did a good thing for this boy, you know?
Oh, you did. Yeah, you did. But that's the thing. It's like, that person in particular, it was hard for me to get along with because I was like, I can't just like forget who I am to like cave in to become a drone. Because you are essentially, as a writer there, you are part of Vince's brain. Like, you have to understand how he thinks. You have to know all the fucking rules that he's laid out, and they change all the time. And you never know what he's going to get mad at. And you can never have, you can never just not have an answer.
Yeah.
You can never say, I don't know. You have to have a reason. And, you know, it was just this, like, constant, like, crazy headspace where I felt it was just completely absurd all the time. And for me, it was hard for the people who took it so seriously to take them seriously, you know? But then I'm also not, I don't know. I'm, you know, they'd be like, the day that Shane tried to fight me, one of the guys that was egging it on was like, oh, I guess you don't care that Vince paid for your house. And I was like, I don't have a fucking house. Like, I barely made enough. You know, and, you know, like,
where is it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
He must be like, saving for Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I started seeing like, you know, other people that were outside of the WWE that their creative property or whatever they would do was they were, you know, getting paid for it. And then 2 years out, there was a line that I had written, I think, and it was on a shirt. And I was like, fuck, like they take your money, you know. Or they don't take your money, but you earned it. This is very socialist shit, I guess.
No, but 100%. Like, and that's not—it's not a union job, right? So you're not getting.
I got caught up. No, it's a right to work, and that was the thing that really freaked me out the whole time. It was like they could fire you at any moment, and so they tell you they're going to give you 3 months as like a trial period. But every week I was like, this is my last week because something would happen, and I'm like, okay, I'm done. And it was really hard because I was trying to save up money, but then in fear of like, well, this is it. But then it just kept going on and on, which is fine. But every week you had that fear of like,
no.
Right. And that drove me really crazy because it was like, not only was I liked what I was doing. I liked being on the road. I liked working with a lot of the people I was working with. But it was constantly like, at any moment, this thing will just end. And then you got to like, start the hustle again. Cause it, you know, it felt like it took me so far away from everything else I was doing before, but then it made me realize what was I doing before, you know?
What was it like if you were like a budding wrestler, like trying to break through as a wrestler? Like, was it more nerve wracking? Cause then he could just end your career. He is like the end all be all.
Right. So there's a lot. So I think about this a lot because there was guys that I wrote for that when I left, they were in like they were in NXT, which is like the it was at one point the developmental brand. So we'd like build their characters, and I had most of my fun I had on that show because Triple H ran it. He kind of let you be a little more hands on, and I got to write for like Aleister Black, Velveteen Dream, Adam Cole, and the Undisputed Era, like all these like guys who are like should be main event players. And for Aleister Black, for example, like I loved working with him. I thought his character was cool. I left. He goes up to the main roster. I think Vince liked him for a couple months, but now he's not on TV. And so you just see like, oh, Vince just got bored with him. And that's what happens. Like, damn. If he doesn't like immediately spark Vince's, if he doesn't just like look at you and go, oh, I see money in you, you're going to be a star. And it's really an uphill fight until you prove yourself.
Jesus. Like,
you either really come up with a great gimmick or you get as cut as a motherfucker, you know?
So you think it's more like
sad, man.
Entertainer, showman, like being funny, having a personality, or just being insanely athletic? Like what is right. the main thing that you think?
Being an entertainer. For Vince, you need to be able to talk. A good example, Enzo Amore is a great athlete for how big he is, but he could talk like a motherfucker, and that got him over, and that he knew how to like twist and turn the audience. There's some guys that are the greatest athletes, wrestlers in the world. But if they can't fucking talk, they won't survive. You know, that's why Brock has a mouthpiece. He has Paul Heyman talk for him because he can't talk.
Yeah, and he's such a beast. And he was such a beast that it was like impossible. He's a monster of a man.
Yeah, yeah. You need to. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, he's King Kong. You put him in a fucking cage, and you get a guy to say, "My guy's gonna kick the shit out of your monster." Or whatever.
Yes, he's such a monster that he can't even speak. Like did Andre the Giant talk a lot?
He would talk a little bit, but he definitely had, I think, Bobby the Brain Heenan was a mouthpiece, probably some other people.
Yeah. That's
but yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, yeah, I love, it's such an art to me now where when I watch it, it's just like, oh, I see how they're trying to make this person have this angle, or, you know, like you just learn all that. Like it's weird because it's more like a comic book to me now, week to week.
Yeah.
One of the last things I did in the normal world before COVID was Matt and I went to a wrestling show together and we took mushrooms and it didn't work.
Yeah. The wrestling or the mushrooms? Like
I don't know. I mean, the wrestling didn't work. The mushrooms are fire. Okay. It's just all of them. They were just hugging. I was like, wow, this is amazing. But yeah, that was one of the last things we did. We went to fucking, what was it? Stanford?
New Haven. We ate some. No, New Haven, dude.
New Haven, garbage pizza, bro. Don't you dare. If you're from New Haven or you say Connecticut pizza is the best pizza in the world, fucking slide in my DM so I could push you down the fucking ladder, okay? Because I'll say this, it was one of the worst pizzas we ever had. Remember the waitress, Matt? The waitress, she
comes over. She was nervous.
Because I was there.
She heard Seb's accent and she was like, oh, fuck. This guy's going to call our shit out. Fuck.
And she's walking over chewing gum. So that's how you know this. I go, oh, this place has a potential. Hey, how you doing? She goes, just so you know. She goes, you boys are from New York, right? I go, of course, yeah, we're from New York. And she goes, just so you know, we do a good pizza up here in New Haven, okay? I'm going to make sure that you get it right, okay? She goes, I'm going to check in on you boys. We get the pizza. It's so fucking dry. The edges, they do a thing where they burn the edges on purpose in New Haven.
Did you tell them?
We were bad mouthing the pizza. The woman never even came up to ask us how the pizza was because she knew how bad we were having, how bad a time we're having. We drank four pitchers of beer with the pizza because of how dry it was. Garbage. Yeah, dude.
And that's the thing. Like, what was that? A 4-hour drive. And somebody in the car was like, I read about this on a blog. It's supposed to be like the greatest pizza in the world.
I read that. Is that you? I was the somebody in that story. Oh. Thank you for trying to protect my identity, but I was the one.
I still want to try. I know there's a place in New Haven that's supposed to be.
We
it's
went
like
there.
The clam. Yeah, yeah. I would still want to try it.
We got the fucking
clam. We had the clam. We got the clam.
And it wasn't good?
No. No. We went to Disney. We even put on the fucking mouse ears. You know what I'm saying, bro?
All right.
It wasn't good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the last time. That was the last big fun event that we did in the world,
right?
Let's go to a WWE event together.
I mean, it is crazy that it's a live stadium show and that you have to write for, there's like really nothing else like it in entertainment.
Nothing.
Arena that is also improv, like some improv script.
Yes.
Like it's like SNL. Yeah. SNL was doing an arena tour almost.
It's like SNL.
And athletic with crazy stunts.
Yes.
Like, it's truly wild to be part of, I guess.
It's like Cirque du Soleil meets SNL. You know what I mean? It's phenomenal. Yeah. And follow football.
it's insane. And it was like mind blowing, like every week going to like at least two, maybe three like packed arenas. And it was just like, this is, I don't know. It's something as it goes away, as it's in the rearview mirror, the experience of it is like, oh man, this is crazy that's all I did for however long. But yeah. And then you just meet people like from around the country or in my case, North America, but like, yeah, I don't know.
Godzilla versus King Kong with Vince McMahon. What would his reaction be? And would he start punching the television? And how quickly before he starts punching both King Kong and Godzilla on screen?
I think he would be like, oh God, they're setting this up all wrong. Damn it. And like, he would be mad about how they're promoting the fight. He'd be like, oh, this poster, I don't know who's the good, who's the baby face and who's the heel. They need to know. And he would be mad about that, because honestly, out of you two, who would you pick to be the good guy and bad guy in that scenario? I mean, I don't know. I think
King Kong is the good guy.
King Kong
is
the
good guy and bad guy in that scenario.
King Kong is King almost Kong human. Yeah, I saw it. And
Godzilla bad. Oh, King Kong was good.
Okay.
I saw it. You don't got to tell me. All right. King Kong's doing sign language with a deaf girl. How is that not good? You know what I mean? That's pure of heart if I've ever heard, you know?
Okay, yeah, so he's good if he's doing that. Yeah, okay, so
yeah,
then we know that, then he'd be like, oh okay, and then he'd be like, why is he wearing that? Or like, you know, he would comment and he'd be like, why is he not green enough? Or you know, why can't I see his dong? Yeah, it would just, I'm sure he'd be into it if they were like fighting in like DC and it was like people that like had to give him permits to do certain shows in certain states and like that building got destroyed, he'd be like, ha ha, yes, do that again. Eat those humans. Or like, yeah, I don't know.
So you think he wouldn't mind seeing cities burn that have wronged him?
No, oh, no. Yeah, anyway. Oh, they didn't let me do a show in that town. St. Louis, oh, burn it. Whatever.
Have King Kong swing from the arch right into Godzilla.
Wow. The arch is there, damn it. Why aren't we using it? Yeah.
Wow. I mean, you need to maybe do a Vince McMahon show where you play him. You know what I mean? Mets, you might
do
need
a phenomenal job at his
sport. You do a phenomenal. If I heard him talk, I would go, why are you talking like Matt Weir? You know?
I listen to him so much. And I try to like basically imitate all of the old guys there. I at one point I was like, I can get all their voices. Now I just do Vince all the time.
Amazing. Matt, you have so many fucking wrestling stories. This was so beautiful.
Yeah,
Matt, thank you so much for coming on again and sharing all these stories. Matt, is there anything that you want to plug that you're up to in quarantine?
During quarantine, I've actually been part of a cartoon in my super funny roommate Mookie Thompson and my buddy Nimesh Patel are producing, and they're doing a lot. Mookie's doing a lot on it. I get to play I play a penguin called El Pango, and I do storyboards for it. It's fun. And then we're just making a small cartoon out of the back of our apartment, but yeah, it's pretty cool. It's called Zoo Idiots. I should
thank you. That's the most important part is saying the name.
Where can we find it?
Yeah, well, check out zooidiots.com or also look up Nimesh Patel on YouTube. He has it all over his YouTube.
Nice.
And then other than that, I have some, I do special effects, and there's some short films coming out that one I really want to get out there because I built the namesake character. And so I'm excited to get that out, but I will promote that later. Cool. I
love that.
Sold out my own promos.
Robbie, is there anything that you want
to
plug?
I'm so bad at it.
You crush.
No, just listen. Keep listening to this podcast. If you know someone, if you're listening to this, you know somebody who loves wrestling or would like these stories, definitely share it with them. Or if you know you have friends that do it, put it on your story.
Yeah, send it
I
to
mean,
your
this mom. This was a great podcast. Like, it wasn't all nonsense where me and Sebastian just
excuse nonsense. Me, bro. This is never nonsense when it's just us. Don't you dare. I told a story about my mother, thinking that she was having a heart attack, but she just had a cramp in her toe. Okay, so don't you dare say that what I say is nonsense. Okay, just because Matt's traveled the world with the fucking one of the biggest organizations.
It was all. This was great. Yeah. So share with anyone you think would like it.
Of course, please, yeah, please, hotties, please, please keep sharing the podcast. We love all you hotties out there. Keep rating, reviewing 5 stars. Right, 5 stars. We fucking love this. All right. Share this podcast with all the marks out there. The fucking real wrestling fans. Okay. Robbie, this was beautiful. Hit the fucking music.